I'm SP from Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., a show about the general Marvel comic universe, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other hilarious and fun geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And welcome to Play Comics, where once again we are here looking at a video game based on a comic property, how well that game fits into everything. And today we are just going to have ourselves a magical little time because we have Moses, the well-read mage here from MageCast, to look at a game that we're just going to magically decide counts because I feel like it. So, Red, how are you today?
Magical. Thanks very much. And I appreciate the invite. This is the second half of our non-contractual agreement, our purely platonic agreement to appear on each other's show. So I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Mainly doing it because we both have shows that the other person really likes. So it had to happen.
It did. Yeah.
Today, we are here looking at the Spider-Man arcade game. Normally, arcade games don't really slip in here unless they get a home console release, but they are on a special, if somebody asks me specifically to come talk about it, then we're going to talk about it plan, which is what happened on this one.
Nice. I feel privileged in that regard. That's great.
So what is it that drew you to Spider-Man? Because you threw out some other games that unfortunately I had already done, and most of them were also Spider-Man games.
Right. So Spider-Man as a character is one of the first superheroes that I really remember just enjoying as a young kid. I think in many ways he's the perfect kind of character to introduce children to superheroes. He's really relatable. Not that, you know, at 8 years old, I was selling photographs to a major newspaper publisher. But, you know, and it's been said before, I don't want to rehash everything that's been said about Spider-Man, but he's a human character that has issues and problems that he has to balance. Sometimes he's a bit younger too, which I think made him a bit more accessible for me. But as a kid, it was really just like the kind of candy colored worlds. And I really loved that he just had a ton of cool, wacky, weird villains. So growing up, reading some Spider-Man whenever I could find it. There was no comics shop in my town. So, you know, I would find a comic like at a thrift store, and it would be one of the unfortunate ways in which comics are told as a medium, in my opinion, is like if you find a random comic, it's going to be like 1/17th of a full story. So I never really got to understanding what is Spider-Man about from the comics. But then the WB cartoon came along. That was that Fox or WB? I think it might have been Fox.
I think it was
actually.
Fox.
It was Fox, yeah. The Spider-Man, Radioactive Spider-Man. Yeah, that was good. I really enjoyed that show, and that kind of cemented Spider-Man as a favorite character for many years.
I'm basically the same way with you. My introduction to Spider-Man was that Fox Kids show, which was a few years after this game got released in arcades. But you can still see some similarities there. Also, I was in a few areas that had the Spider-Man newspaper comic, so I would see it there. But even before that, like, we would be out on the playground in elementary school playing superheroes, and Spider-Man was just somebody that we knew about. It was like Batman and Superman in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the success of Spider-Man as a character to my mind, Marvel's most unique mainline superhero, is that he's really kind of, again, this is all opinion based. I don't want somebody to listen to this and be like, how dare you leave out XYZ? But I feel like he occupies a tier that is just Spider-Man, Batman, and Superman as far as ubiquity and iconic status, and just everybody knows who this character is. Like you said, I mean, when we were kids, we just played Spider-Man. I didn't know everything about Spider-Man. I knew that he was Peter Parker. I knew what his superpowers were. And that's all you needed when you were a kid anyway.
Trying to think of who else on Marvel would be that ubiquitous. I can certainly think of three people that are not that ubiquitous, and that's the other playable characters in the game.
In this game, yeah. Yeah, Catwoman, Green Arrow, and Aquaman. Yeah, they're not exactly top tier. But then, I mean, like I was going to say, things have really changed since we were children. I was born in 85. I don't know when you were born, but just superhero media was very different. There was not a huge interconnected film franchise universe that successfully popularized a bunch of really D-tier characters. There were cartoons and like a couple of movies. They made a bunch of Superman movies and a bunch of Batman movies. There was a Wonder Woman TV show, a couple of failed pilots and stuff like that. But I feel like it, in many ways, it kind of parallels what happened with Star Wars. Like Star Wars before I was born, Star Wars kind of a little more nerdy niche stuff, and then now Star Wars is extremely mainstream. I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, first off. Like there's some people who will push against that and be like, oh, you remember the good old days when it was just like wedgies and pocket protectors? I'm like, I don't know about good old days, but now, yeah, it's just a very different environment. A lot of characters have mainstream appeal, and I think that's good. You know, more people can enjoy these characters.
I was born in 86, and you can speak for yourself, but I am still a child.
In some ways, I mean, height-wise, I'm not a child, but yeah. I think the appeal, there it is, of the superhero genre in general is just that ability to, you know, suspend your disbelief and just enjoy the magic for a little while. Which is like when superhero movies get a little too serious, too grounded, too you know, bloody and gory, sometimes they kind of lose some of that sense of magic. But this is a guy that, you know, throws spider webs around and swings through a city and fights bad guys. End of the day, that's kind of what I want out of this genre.
We kind of joked about it earlier about who the other playable characters are, but we do have Black Cat, Hawkeye, and the Submariner, which when this came out were not really well-known characters. Like, you didn't even have the Black Cat Spider-Man interaction from the cartoon to look at. So these ones in particular, I think, were an interesting place. Although you did have Spider-Man teaming up with all of them at some point in the Marvel team-up series that started back in the 70s. But other than that, I can't really think of any time that they've really, like, teamed up with Spider-Man besides Black Cat, because she does that a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I knew these characters purely from the video games, most of the Marvel characters. I didn't read DC until later in life, so read a lot of Spider-Man growing up, and that's pretty much it. Every once in a while, you know, character kind of cameos in there, or they'd team up, but I really wouldn't know who they were. I only knew Hawkman from Hawkman. What are we talking about? Hawkeye. Gosh. Only knew Hawkeye from a couple other video games. There was, I think it was Captain America and the Avengers. Was it the Submariner? I don't think I knew who he was before I encountered this game. And that's kind of weird. Like, isn't Submariner like from the 30s? Like, he's been around, but
he's a Fantastic Four. guy, mostly from my understanding, and I'm not really sure how he fits into here, unless it's just somebody that they could get the license for real easily. Yeah. Black Cat makes sense now. I don't know if she made as much sense back then. But we also have a real good crop of villains in this game that we're looking at as well. And I'm not sure if you're saying anything right now, because I haven't heard you say anything for a little bit, but I am just going to keep talking.
Yeah, go for it. No,
cool.
I didn't think I nodded, but I said, that's about as far as agreement on Black Cat being in this game. I don't really have much information on what she was like at this time. But villain-wise, there are a ton of villains in this game.
You start off going after Scorpion. You've got, in no particular order besides how they pop into my head, Kingpin, Venom, Electro, Dr. Doom, other people I'm forgetting now, because there's a lot.
Yeah, there definitely are a lot. Dr. Octopus, there's definitely a ton. And that, I think, is one of the things that I really enjoyed about this game, that there are so many encounters. This game and the Spider-Man animated series LJN game on Super Nintendo, I believe it was also on Genesis, were some of my favorite Spider-Man games growing up, because there were so many bad guys to fight in them. I believe there's some of the goblins are in here. Again, there's just a lot, so it's kind of hard to remember. But I want to say too that these versions of the villains, I mean, not so much the heroes kind of just had their iconic look. It's not like they changed the Spider-Man costume too frequently in any big way, but these versions of these villains is, you know, exactly the way that I think about these characters. I think about Electro as having that really stupid starfish mask with the green and yellow spandex. I think of Venom being the big hulking bulky guy. And again, like, some of these haven't changed dramatically. Sometimes in some of the more recent movies, they've changed the way that these characters look. Like Electro is a big example. But this game has the most iconic versions of these characters, to my mind, at least.
The Sandman portrayal in here is exactly the Sandman portrayal we get in everything else, which is not a complaint at all, because that's a wonderful look for him and just instantly lets you know who he is. There's absolutely no question about it.
Yeah, and having that degree of recognizability would be important, I think, for a game like this. It's a licensed property. If you're trying to get kids who are wandering through an arcade or a mall or whatever to stop and put a token in or a quarter in, you've got to recognizably be like, okay, this is Spider-Man. Okay, this is Venom. This is, you know, all these different characters. This is the Green Goblin. When I encountered this game, I think we might have mentioned this either in private or on the podcast that we previously did together. I was at an airport when I found this, flying between islands in Hawaii, and just kind of waiting for the next flight and wandering around. And I encounter, kind of like tucked in where the restrooms were, on the inside of the turn, there were a couple of arcade machines, like right outside the restroom door. It's really, really weird. Guess that what they thought that was the only place they could put those. I don't recall what the other game was, but this was the game that I decided to put some money into and play for a little while. And I never got to finish it in that encounter because it was time to get my flight going at a certain point. But I remember that I got pretty far. Unfortunately, that was the only time I ever encountered this game in the wild. And so I forgot about it for a long, long time. until MAME came along, until emulation came along, and I realized, oh, you can emulate arcade games. So like what you were saying earlier, dude, I totally get the sentiment of not really wanting to do arcade games for your show, because there's a kind of impermanence there, right? Like if, especially if it's never gotten a home port, there may be a ton of people who had never even heard of it, never mind played it. So yeah, I just think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and that's completely the reason why I'm making them be on special requests only, because it's going to be hard to find somebody for some really obtuse arcade game that can't be played anywhere else, was never released anybody else. And I mean, I say that while I'm having trouble finding some people for some NES games that I skipped because I could never find anybody. But at least those had a home console release.
Right. It's, I mean, at least two, like, that's something that you could track with data about home console games, is you could track, you know, units sold, provided that information is available. And some of the more obscure instances, I could imagine it not being. But with arcade cabinets, you could track potentially how many cabinets were sold across the country. But there's probably no way to get any data about how many people played those cabinets while they were still in operation.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I mean, my best possible scenario there would be if I could magically find somebody who kept track of how much money they made on a certain cabinet. And even then, that's how much money they made, not how many people played it. And definitely doesn't, because it can't account for how many people were standing around watching and experience the game through somebody else playing.
Yeah, there's just no way. I was thinking, even though, you know, a lot of arcade games were score-based or time-based, and so you would be invited to punch in your initials or your name for your score. But even that could be potentially misleading. I mean, somebody could use as many different initials or names for their scores as they'd like, and there's nothing that the machine could do to kind of track that otherwise. So unfortunately, it's one of those, there's a part of that that irks me. It's one of those things that is just lost to history. There's really no way to know how many people have played this game in particular.
Well, speaking of things being lost to history, we're going to grab one of those weird black cylinders with the gray caps, head down to the arcade, and see if we can find a copy while I drop some promos for a few other shows.
Hey there, new friends. This is Ellen Weatherford. Do you like animals? Do you enjoy arbitrarily rating things out of 10? Can you tolerate puns? If so, join me and my husband Christian over at Just the Zoo of Us for a weekly review of your favorite animal species. Just the Zoo of Us is available on Spotify, iTunes, and other podcast apps. You can find us at anchor.fm/justthezooofus. See you soon.
Hello, I'm Anthony.
And I'm Dr. Issues.
And we're hosts of Capes on the Couch, the podcast where comics get counseling.
Superheroes don't always get to go home happy. That's where we come in.
We offer psychiatric and mental health analysis of comic book characters.
So check us out at capesonthecouch.live and across all social media platforms at Capes on the Couch.
Those are some great shows to check out, but first let's finish up with this one. So Red, much like your show, I like putting a lot of things in context here. Especially because we're jumping back in time for when this was released, because Sega put out this arcade cabinet in 1991. Hmm. Now, do you know what else important was happening related to arcades around that time?
Related to arcades around that time? So, yeah, yep. You said important, and I was like, Super Nintendo, and then you said arcades. So, I don't know. I spent a lot of time at a Chuck E. Cheese and Tilt and Fun Factory around that time. But, I don't know, another major release around that time?
Turtles in Time had recently come out, like less than a year before this one.
Yeah, and that's a huge game. That is not small.
That game is another four-player at a time run around beating people up kind of game. You also had Streets of Rage coming out. You had Golden Axe coming out. Now that I'm saying that, I can't remember if those two were coming out as a home console port or as an arcade machine themselves. But either way, those are some other wildly popular games that this one had to fight against. So the fact that this game has almost tried to be lost to time really doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I mean, and like you start mentioning things like Turtles in Time, Streets of Rage, Golden Axe, I think a lot of the reasons why those were like, why they remain popular and why they remain like oft mentioned is because of those home console ports. Like, I don't know, I've never seen a Golden Axe in an arcade ever. I don't think I've ever seen a Streets of Rage. I saw, you know, a favorite was the X-Men arcade game. And I remember Turtles in Time in the arcades, or other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games in the arcades. But I think that, yeah, the home console release really helped with the longevity. And so with Spider-Man never really getting that, or this game at least never really getting that, definitely does feel like, you know, losing it to time. Speaking of like with the X-Men arcade game, that one you could get on PS3, I think, for a while. And then at some point it was delisted. Not sure if it was put back up, but this game would have been awesome if it had been available on PSN at some point. But yeah, unfortunately that just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely missed out on that with the X-Men one. I'm gonna have to try to find a way, you know, besides emulating it, to go back and be able to play that.
Yeah. I mean, good luck. And then too, it makes sense. You know, I've run into a lot of people who have been like, you know, why are publishers so greedy? Why can't they, you know, just re-release these games, snap their fingers and boom, here's a port. The non-fun answers is, well, it takes some effort. And then even non-funner is licensing is humongous. That definitely costs money. So when you're looking at a game like Spider-Man, the video game, that's got not just Spider-Man, but multiple other heroes, and then a bunch of different villains spread out across Marvel properties. There's a lot there. So I can understand why it was not ported, all that to say.
Although it was developed by Sega, so I think they should have hurried up and gotten it out at least as the one-time Genesis or Sega CD release.
Yeah, I could have seen something like this on Sega CD, definitely.
The plot for this one is about as simple as you're ever going to get. Spider-Man notices an artifact, has to stop the Kingpin from getting it. I mean, it's an arcade beat-em-up game. You don't worry about plots in those. You just go beat people up.
Yeah, and I think that's also fine for the superhero genre as well. I don't think that we need to have the super complicated Crisis on Infinite Earths metaphysics. I don't think we need to have, you know, like what happened in a certain decade with superheroes wrestling with drug abuse. I don't think we need to have these really complicated adult themes on all of these characters. And the beauty of Spider-Man, I think, is that flexibility, that there can be really complex and really adult storylines told. And then at the same time, you can just have a good guys versus bad guys. You can just have a really simple premise and just have kind of this really fairy tale like story. And I think that's just fine for this context.
One thing that I really liked about this game, though, is that it's not just a side-scrolling beat-em-up. When you get to certain points in the levels, it also switches over to being more of a 2D platformer game. And I think that's a nice way to break up what can be monotonous if you play a ton of side-scrolling beat-em-ups.
Absolutely. That, the first time I saw it, blew my mind. My jaw hit the floor. I hadn't seen a game that, you know, you start off doing this side-scrolling beat-em-up. Some people still call those brawlers, whatever. And then the camera zooms back, and all of a sudden, Spider-Man is small fighting a gigantic Venom. That is something that plays out throughout the rest of the game. Then, and when you're doing the platforming sections, when it's zoomed out, you can throw projectiles instead of just doing kind of your punching and kicking like with the beat 'em up. And yeah, that you're absolutely right. It changes up the pace and the rhythm of the game. Quite recently, I was playing Streets of Rage 4. Streets of Rage is a series that I really like. Having not grown up as a Sega kid, it was one of the very few series that I was like, I wish that I could play this whenever I wanted to. Great music, all that. But Streets of Rage 4 very much kind of has that monotony that you're mentioning, that tedium of like, it's just the same thing, slowly walking right across various stages, punching and kicking people until they're dead. And having something as old as Spider-Man the video game, because again, this is 91, having something that far back that fused two genres together in a way to break up that monotony is, I think, really excellent. So it's one of the things, like, you know, we were talking about this being lost to time. There's a kind of sadness there, I think, because there are so many people that didn't get to experience this game. And I think it is really special. There's a lot of Spider-Man beat-em-ups. There's a lot of Spider-Man video games. But this one is really unique in that regard.
Yeah, like, I was watching some playthrough videos, and unfortunately, that's the way that I experience most of this game for right now. And I'm definitely going to go back and change that later. But the first time I heard them mention that there were also these side-scrolling platformer levels, I'm just sitting there like, okay, yeah, cool, you know, go to a new level, just go like that. I was not expecting it to make sense in the story, be a continuous shot kind of thing at all. So the fact that they pulled this off in 1991 is amazing.
Yeah, and I think too that probably had to be one of the major reasons why it was not ported or so easily ported. We've all played bad arcade ports that went to home console. Sometimes they're too sluggish, sometimes they just have to tone it down too far, given the hardware capabilities. But this is one that, yeah, I think if they hadn't waited for something CD based, it really would have been kind of neutered.
It's also one where I could have accepted it if the home console version had done that, just switch over and not the amazing camera work. But I can also totally be behind the decision to not do it if they didn't think they could pull it off well enough.
Yeah, definitely. I hadn't even thought about that idea of the change in the, you know, between platforming and beat 'em up taking place across levels. But yeah, having it mid-level is really great. It definitely breaks things up. There's a lot of power-ups too, spread throughout all that. There's a decent amount of kind of just like nooks and crannies to explore. And that's another beef that I have with the beat-em-up genre. I really love beat-em-ups, but sometimes they could just be a little too hard. They can lean into that coin-munching mentality. So giving the player enough power-ups, enough life-healing items is, I think, really good. It kind of, you know, lets you experience more of the game and not die so frequently and so frustratingly.
Funnily enough, The biggest complaint I heard about this game was that it was too easy, partly because of all of those health pickups you could get and everything.
That is interesting. I don't know if that I've thought about the difficulty of this too much, but on a, you know, I wasn't prepped for like a long arcade run in that airport when I was a kid. I definitely remember dying, but I remember getting pretty far as well. That probably speaks to its comparative ease, you know, next to some of the more coin munchier arcade beat 'em ups at the time.
Yeah, this one had some nice little touches that I haven't seen in other things. Like, your health is slowly depleting instead of having a timer to get through the level, which I think is a great move.
Yeah, that bit does feel like it occupies that same space that a timer would. And I get the sense that, you know, they want to put a timer in here so you can't just spend 25 cents and beat the entire game, you know, so that they can make some money out of it. But yeah, there's things like that. There's other things that I feel like you get from playing it yourself, that like there's a kind of kinetic nature to this game that I think is really well done. One of the things that I look for to critique in beat 'em ups is, do the hitboxes make sense? When I throw a punch and it looks like it passes through the enemy sprite and they don't get hit, that's super frustrating. If I can stand like an inch above, you know, on a vertical axis, the enemy, and they can't hit me, that seems a little ridiculous. So in this game, but I don't know, the characters seem to have a kind of weight to them. Like when you fall over, or you knock an enemy over, there's a boom. There's a sense that something fell and hit the ground. When you throw a punch, there's a really good kind of sound effect that makes it sound like you actually hit something. And so I feel like that tangibility is really good and really well polished on this title.
Something else that I really like, which might play into how easy the game is that while doing your special moves takes away some of your health, which makes sense. It's just a way to keep you from being able to spam your special moves throughout the entire game. Doing your special move when you only have one health point left will not kill you. And you can also still do the special move.
That seems a little unusual, doesn't it?
It does. But if you're that far down, why not let you go crazy?
That's true. That's something that, like, when I replay this, I'm definitely going to have to try that, because I don't know that I knew that. I don't know that I discovered that, or if I just forgot it. But yeah, that would be fun to just spam a move at one HP.
That's definitely one I would not have picked up on my own. Yay to the gameplay videos that I found that pointed that out to me. But coming back to the characters on this one, you would think that Hawkeye and Submariner and Black Cat would have a pretty significant moveset difference from Spider-Man and from the rest of each other. But they're basically playing as the same character with a palette swap.
I think that's even more obvious too when you're on the platforming sections. Everybody just kind of throws a very short range projectile. Spider-Man throws, like, you know, these little web globs. Of course, we all know what Hawkeye is going to do, but yeah, that kind of makes it a little samey. I don't think that that's unique to this game. I think there are a lot of beat 'em ups in which there's a lot of sameness. The Ninja Turtles come to mind, but they're all the same thing. It's not like here where you've got, you know, a guy who has spider powers, some kind of cat lady, a guy who throws arrows, and then like an Atlantean. So seeing a little bit more variety would be cool. One thing that I really, really dislike is when there's no dash, when there's no running in a beat 'em up. Like I mentioned, Streets 4 kind of had a little bit of a dash, but you really were slow in that. And it's classic Streets of Rage, but in this one, you know, your character is really just walking at a leisurely pace, kind of the whole game. Even if that's in the platforming sections or not. Trying to jump over a hazard can be a little ridiculous too in that sense. In that you can't really get a running jump. You can kind of walk over to the edge of something and then jump. And if you miss, you lose a bit of life.
You can try your swingy jump kick though. Or you're just jumping jump kick if you don't have Spider-Man or Black Cat.
Yeah, which, I mean, I guess this is the equivalent of a running jump. I don't know, I just really can't stand the slow movement, especially for Spider-Man. This guy is supposed to be real agile, and he kind of just walks his way through the whole game.
Yeah, for somebody who is known for being able to get through New York pretty quickly, get wherever he needs to go, the pace that he has in this game is just ridiculous. Like, I would expect Black Cat to be faster. Hawkeye, I can understand being slower if you frame it as he's watching for people where he can shoot his arrows. Submariner, I just have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if this was underwater, he'd be super fast, but yeah, it's one of the more irritating things with some beat-em-ups, at least for me. There are some people that like the slower pace. Again, there's a lot of fans of Streets of Rage, but yeah, for me, I want to see a dash button of some kind.
And the reason why we're not really even talking about the plot of this game is, like I said before, they're just kind of going through and beating people up. At the end, presumably you have a bunch of Doom bots that you beat up because they explode, but then there's more Dr. Doom.
Yeah. I mean, there's Kingpin kind of seems like he's going to be the primary antagonist. You know, you're trying to hunt down this relic, but then suddenly you're going to be fighting Dr. Doom. Which I want to say, even at the time, I knew Dr. Doom wasn't really like a Spider-Man villain. So I felt that was weird, but I also thought that Dr. Doom was like about as cool as it gets. I mean, a doctor and his name is Doom. Like, that's amazing. So I enjoyed that he was in this game for sure.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to take any of the villains out of this game. Everyone that they have in there was a good choice, was somebody that should be in there.
For sure. And one of the game's strengths, too, just having those villains present. There are a couple repeat battles, I'm pretty sure. I think you fight Green Goblin twice. So, I mean, it might have been nicer to have, you know, like a different goblin fight or a different villain entirely. But it's still enjoyable how many bad guys there are to beat up in this game.
On the other hand, you fight Venom like 70 times, and I will still take more.
Well, he's Venom. I mean, you come to expect that.
So overall, if you knew somebody who was looking to get into Spider-Man, would you give them this game as a bit of a primer course? Excluding all other games, we're just pretending that this is the only one that exists.
So I mean, that changes the question, right? I thought I was ready with an answer at first. You know, I really don't think, even with that extreme limitation, that it's that really representative of Spider-Man. And that's for a variety of reasons, which I think that we covered decently well. One of them being that the four playable characters aren't really all that different. It doesn't make Spider-Man out to be all that spectacular or amazing or remarkable in any sense. He just kind of comes off as a guy in a costume, walking slowly, punching and kicking people. And every once in a while, there's kind of some web-based power, and then there's wall crawling on the platforming stages. But again, your other playable characters do that. Then the other fact of the matter being, like, this is populated with not just really kind of the iconic Spider-Man villains, but Dr. Doom is in here as well. So I almost feel like this would just confuse people and create, like, different expectations about who Spider-Man is and, like, what he's about. It's not even in, like, the game doesn't even take place entirely in New York either. It's kind of spread out, and there's a lot of different areas. So I don't know, but knowing that there are Spider-Man games that exist, I feel like I wouldn't really recommend this one as the primer. The other thing too is that it's an arcade game. Not everybody is going to want to set up emulators. Not everybody is going to encounter this arcade cabinet in the wild. And very few people are going to want to actually purchase a still operating arcade cabinet with Spider-Man the video game on it, if that's even still a viable option in 2022.
We would both totally buy it though, right?
It depends. I mean, have you seen? I would love to own arcade cabinets. I really would. But man, the prices on those can be insane. They can really be insane. And kind of something that takes a little bit of the air out of that dream. I've always wanted to own arcade cabinets, but I was speaking with a maintenance technician at an arcade once, and he was just talking about the reality of, like, a lot of these cabinets are wearing out, you know, and there's things that go that break, and then it's hard to fix them. So it sucks. I would love to get, like, one of those arcade one-up cabinets and kind of mod it and hack it and do all kinds of fun stuff with it. But I really think that, yeah, unless you're, like, super rich or have a lot of, like, technical skills, then unfortunately owning our own arcade is gonna have to be a dream that stays with the childhood self from the 80s.
How we're gonna get over that?
I mean, unless you own one now, do you?
No, I don't own one now. I'm not rich enough for that.
Yeah. Neither do
I. I'm with you, though. This one, really, I'm conflicted. Because you have a super quick introduction to a bunch of the main Spider-Man villains. But it's put in a setting that is so close, but not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And you also hit completely dead on the head why I had to start putting the stipulation that this game exists in a vacuum. Because too many people were saying things like, this other better game exists, so I would do that instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this game exists with a lot of really interesting design novelties. I think that there is a lot here for the Spider-Man fan, but I don't think that there's a ton here for somebody who, you know, needs an introduction to Spider-Man. I feel like this would kind of be a lousy introductory, well, a lousy primer for Spider-Man. So and then the accessibility aspect of it just kind of takes that completely off the table.
What would you say are the top two or three things that this game gets right about Spider-Man?
Gets right about. Okay, so the number of villains on display. This baffles me, and I'd be curious to know your thoughts on this. Like, every once in a while I'll meet people who are like, you know, villains are terrible. We don't need villains. You know, villains are a crutch for bad superheroes. Typically, I encounter that whenever I get into a discussion about criticizing the MCU. At this point, it seems like most people agree that a lot of the early villains, especially in the MCU, weren't amazing. And so the fan pushback against that developed into, well, you don't need great villains because the superheroes can carry their own show. And that kind of being the sense there that, like, you know, supervillains were just distracting from the superheroes. I don't think that's the case. I think that Spider-Man has probably the best rogues gallery in Marvel. I think that his collection of villains range far beyond just, oh, this is like an evil version of the hero, an inverted villain. I think he's, there's a lot of variety there, a lot that speaks to kind of the science fiction aspect of Spider-Man. A lot of street level, a lot of, you know, even cosmic and a lot of mechanical going on. So that is something that absolutely I think is amazing about this game. But I did want to ask you, though, before I move on from that. I mean, what do you think about that idea that, like, you know, villains aren't needed? They're kind of like a crutch. They distract from the heroes.
While I think that certainly can be true, 98% plus of Spider-Man's villains are really good. Mm-hmm. And I love the way that they're implemented. Like you said, they're not just the anti-Spider-Man. They're their own thing. They're very relatable with how they got how they are. There's a lot of crossover with the other MCU heroes and other Marvel heroes within who you would think of as a Spider-Man villain. And I love the Spider-Man villains so much because most of them make perfect sense to me why they're off being a villain. I mean, mm-hmm. Eddie Brock goes and basically gets possessed by an alien. Okay, he's a villain. Doc Ock goes and gets laughed out of the lab. Okay, he's a villain. It just makes perfect sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on top of that, I mean, the villains are so colorful, so memorable. It's harkening back to the era of gimmick villains. One of the things that I dislike from certain superhero movies is when the villain's just like a guy in a suit. Like, that to me is like, why am I watching a superhero movie? Like, this is trying to be, you know, commentary on, you know, big tech and capitalism. And I'm like, I just want to watch somebody punch a bad guy in the face. Like, that's what I paid money for, to eat this popcorn and be in here and watch this movie. So like, in that regard, like, Kingpin, super boring to me, super boring. But then you're absolutely right. You've got Doc Ock, you've got Venom. I think the Green Goblins have always been really cool, kind of the goblins in general. Just people in weird suits having weird powers. There's a lot of really animal-based Spider-Man villains as well, which I think also goes toward making them a little more memorable. Whereas, like, if you were to pick another, you know, big Marvel superhero, Iron Man or Captain America, for instance, I couldn't name more than less than a handful of villains for those characters. Whereas I feel like Spider-Man is right up there with Batman as having these amazing villains. Mentioning Batman too, I feel like the whole pushback against the idea of like a hero is only as great as a villain in a lot of ways is because of the Joker. The Joker's been so prevalent everywhere, in many ways been so overdone, that people are just kind of over that. So I get that aspect on the criticism of, like, you know, villains don't have to be that meaningful. But at base level, I think the villain needs to provide conflict. And so, you know, whether they have a weird suit or whether they just have like a suit and tie, they need to be able to provide interesting conflict for these characters.
What do you think is the biggest thing that this game gets wrong about Spider-Man?
He's slow. Oh my gosh. He's slow. That's it.
I know, and it's so frustrating because it's Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. I really would have loved I mean, like, I love the Spider-Man in the Marvel versus Capcom games. Very agile, you know, crouched over and just called, always kind of bent in weird ways. Where in this one, his anatomy is so like middle-aged human. He's got a little bit of a hunch over as he's walking forward. Makes me wonder if they had painted over, not like rotoscoping, but like Mortal Kombat type stuff, if they'd kind of painted over human actors to kind of get that realism here. I just don't think that it really serves the character.
I was honestly wondering if they had just painted over previous sprites that they had.
Yeah, possibly. I don't know. And I imagine there's not a ton of information out there on the development of this game either.
I'm going to very confidently say that nobody can find out any information on the development of this game. And it's definitely not, so somebody on the internet can come prove me wrong. Chris Baker.
Hopefully somebody on Reddit hears that.
And finally, the question that you're not ready for. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Oh, come on now. Sam the Eagle. Okay. I tweeted once. I should have said Spider-Man is my favorite Muppet. I tweeted once, never trust anyone who doesn't have a favorite Muppet. Because, like, are you even human? But yeah, Sam the Eagle, I think, is like the perfect straight man. Who's just like almost never in on the joke and just kind of awful, but great when paired with other Muppets. If I had to choose like a mainline Muppet though, Gonzo all day.
I like the more out there picks better anyway.
Yeah, like if somebody said Kermit the Frog, you'd be like, all right, remind me to never talk to you again. But no, just kidding. But I mean, I love Kermit the Frog. I love Jim Henson's Kermit the Frog. I love Frank Oz's Miss Piggy. I don't know if like anybody listening was prepared to realize that Muppet snobs exist, but yeah, they do. I guess I'm one of them because I'm like the original voice actors. Not just had different voices. I feel like that kind of misses the point. But they just brought different kinds of personality to those characters. So, and there is something to say that to tie that back to Spider-Man too. I mean, like, there are so many different versions of Spider-Man, and the best versions are the one that capture what the character is about. Spider-Man, the video game that we're talking about, this could have been really any other character's game, really. If you just swapped characters out. Could have been an X-Men game.
Jumping back to your Kermit the Frog, Muppet Show Kermit is vastly superior to movie Kermit because he is a bit of an asshole.
Interesting. Yeah, it seems like, oh, now we're going to have like a huge in-depth discussion on Muppets. It seems like there's more kind of frenetic and stressed out quality to Kermit on The Muppet Show. Whereas he kind of gets to be himself on the movie, like playing himself, you know? Like even from the very first one where he's just chilling in a swamp with a banjo. But I think the Muppets are best when they're together and it's not just Kermit on a banjo. Kermit on a banjo is like Kermit living his best life, but then Kermit on the Muppet Show trying not to have a mental breakdown every 5 seconds because of the sheer anxiety-inducing chaos from the rest of his cast members is also, I think, a great part of that character. And something that I think some later actors who portrayed Kermit miss by just making him angry all the time. Whereas Kermit should have that balance that Jim Henson created.
Sure, nobody relates at all to anxiety-ridden Kermit. Definitely not me.
Yeah. No, if you've ever been in a manager position, people are always bagging on managers, and there's bad managers, obviously, but being a manager is not easy when everybody else is insane.
And yes, there being tons of different versions of Spider-Man means that everybody can find their own favorite version of Spider-Man as long as they acknowledge, and you can say whatever you want about this because I will just cut it out if I disagree with you, but as long as you acknowledge that the best version of Spider-Man is Gwen Stacy from Earth 65, we're all good.
So I was ready for the Muppets question. I don't know if I was ready for that statement, though. That's deep Spider-Man lore right there.
Ghost Spider forever. If the costume wasn't so much white, I would have the tattoo already. But Ren, it has been great talking to you about all of this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
Yeah, thanks again for having me. It was a joy to talk about a game that I have never talked about in this depth with literally anybody. And I imagine, too, that the both of us now having participated in a podcast on this game may be among the esteemed few in the human race who have ever done so. Because this one's pretty forgotten. But you can find me on Magecast Podcast. That is everywhere that podcasts are enjoyed, pretty much. Not on YouTube, because it's a mess to get those videos together at that length. So find me, Magecast Podcast. You can find me on Twitter, at The Well-Read Mage, on Twitch, at The Well-Read Mage. And also, now I'm going to be helping to put together the NES Pro magazine. I'm going to be the director of content, so helping to gather writers, scout talent, set up interviews, and figure out what kind of articles go into this magazine. It was fully funded within 5 days, and now we're looking at stretch goals. So you can check that out on Kickstarter, NES Pro magazine. Check it out. Let me know. And if you're a writer and you want to pitch an idea, reach out to me. We've got an email set up for that, and I'd love to chat with you.
And as always, all of those links will be down in the show notes, because clicking links is so much easier than trying to remember how to spell things.
Oh, who writes stuff down? If you're on a podcast, if you're listening to a podcast and you're like writing down like links and stuff, like where to find people, that's dedication.
I've done it every once in a while, back when I had slow enough times at work to listen to podcasts, and that doesn't happen anymore.
Boom.
And as always, if you want to hear more from me, head on over to playcomics.com, where you can find all kinds of reviews for stuff and new episodes of the podcast when I get around to putting them out, which really should be more often than this one took, and all kinds of fun things like that. Or over on Twitter, where you can find me at playcomicscast, where I have political hot takes and comics and video game news. But mostly lately, it's political hot takes because the world is being shit. If you want to help support the show and my political hot takes, one way you can do that is taking this podcast and shoving it into other people's ear holes. Get their consent first, or at least a warning, because having things surprisingly shoved into your ears is not very much fun. Or you can always support the show on Patreon. You know, that kind of thing. Money does kind of help me pay the bills for the show, but, you know, it's a fun thing. I like to do this anyway. Please don't forget that Play Comics is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, home to a bunch of other wonderfully geeky shows, one of which is Legends of S.H.I.E.L.D., where I get to go and practice some video editing skills, something that I should have been doing for here more often. We'll get back to that later. If you like the music that I'm really talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/best-day to check out Best Day's music, but most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, and go find yourself a new favorite character. And welcome to Play Comics, where once again we are here looking at a, you know what I forgot to ask about? What am I calling you on this episode?
That's all right. I've done that a couple of times.
The little kids are going to have no idea what I'm talking about.
Those little medication jars or whatever they were.
Oh, I was thinking the camera film rolls.
Oh, I haven't seen one of those for a while.
I haven't either. Except for when I was cleaning out a box at my parents' house, because the box had been there for a while.
Yeah, I think I would have expected to find like pills in there or something if I found one. I don't know. I don't know why I thought those were like medicine containers.
Oh, we definitely took those Chuck E. Cheese and they would put as many quarters as they could fit in there and say, this is all you get.
Yeah, grandma would pack us some tokens inside of Ziploc bags. So that was our go-to.